This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Okay, everybody, welcome to the People Speak Radio Show. This is your guest show host again, Charles Giuliani, still filling in for Basima, still recovering from a heart attack, but I guess she's doing fine, so hopefully she'll be coming on in the not-too-distant future. But in the meantime, I'll be continuing to guest host for you. Today we have some interesting guests lined up. We've got Bob Gimlin and Bill Munns. Both are researchers into the Bigfoot phenomenon. This is something that always intrigued me as a kid. I think the first time I was exposed to it was when they had the old In Search of television series that Leonard Nimoy used to host, which always fascinated me. I don't think I ever missed one of those shows. And they did a thing on Bigfoot, and ever since then, I was always intrigued by it. Every time I would walk in the woods, I'd always be looking to see if I would see Bigfoot coming around the corner. But anyway, here they are to join us, and I'm sure they got a lot of interesting things to share. So with no further ado, let's welcome Bob Gimlin and Bill Munns. Welcome.
Thank you
very much.
Charles, might I make one quick correction?
Sure.
Bob is the person who actually saw it for real. Okay?
Oh, really?
And he's the one who saw it for real, and I'm the guy who's been trying to explain the film that shows what he saw. So I just wanted to clear that up. You know, Bob is the one man alive today. His partner, Roger, of course, passed away many years ago. He is the one man alive today who actually saw this thing in the flesh, and it has to have been one of the most remarkable experiences in the world. And I've spent about 4.5 years studying the film, trying to understand, analyze, and finally sort it all out about what it was that he saw.
Now, is this that famous film where off in the distance you see...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay, wow.
That's the film.
Shame on me. I don't research my guests well enough. I do this all the time.
No, it's okay.
This was literally a last-minute job. I was trying to read up on your website at the last minute while ordering Chinese food and trying to woof it down before the show started. I'm terrible.
Quite
terrible
all right.
So, wow, this is even more significant than I realized. This is we got a piece of history with us here today in the flesh.
Yes, you do.
Very famous film that's been seen around the world. I wish, I'm sure probably most of our listeners have actually seen this, but it would be nice if we had the visual effect here. You don't get that with radio, so, you know, it could actually run the clip. It's not very long, is it? What is it, about 10, 20 seconds worth of...
It usually runs about a minute.
I've only seen 20 seconds worth of it, but it's a very famous clip.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one that is not debunkable. No one's ever been able to prove it as a hoax. It's clearly some very large creature. There's been a lot of analysis done on it, and even skeptics have said that, they can't debunk it.
Yeah, they've tried.
Yeah,
but
sure.
They can't.
Wow. So, for those that aren't familiar with this story, definitely feel it was back in the 70s, was it not? I think that was actually included in the In Search of show.
1967.
Okay, right. So, yeah, I think that clip was shown. I think that was one of the things that really intrigued me as a kid, seeing that for the first time. So was this in Northern California, I believe?
Bob, you want to take that one?
Yes, sir, it was. Up a place called Bluff Creek in Northern California, about 32 miles northwest of Willow Creek, California.
That's in the Redwoods, isn't it?
Well, no, it's not in the Redwoods. It's just out of the Redwoods a few hundred miles, but there's great, huge, big trees up in that area. Most of them are red fir and some ponderosa pine, but it is heavily forested, steep mountains, rugged, rugged, really rugged, nice country.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a heavily forested area, so you could certainly hide a lot of things up in there without people knowing about it.
Mm-hmm.
I actually saw it for the first time about a week ago. I heard they were in the area, but had never seen one, but I saw a coyote in my backyard. So you never know what's lurking out in the woods.
Oh, yeah.
But that must have been quite an experience. You must have been both thrilled and probably slightly frightened out of your wits at the same time.
Well, yeah, relatively speaking, it was... We had been in that area for a little over 2 weeks. This happened October 20th, 1967, in the fall, of course. And we'd been down there since, I can't remember whether it was the last day of September or the first day of October. But we'd been riding and actually... We were physically tired, just bushed, and we were riding in up in an area which we had covered. We had road had been we had ridden through it before, but this seemed like quite an area, and so we were going back to stay all night, way on further back than where the film site was, and so. We started out that afternoon, or that morning, actually, to go further back in and stay all night, about 12, 14 miles further back than we had ridden before. So we were kind of tired, but like you say, yes, it was very exciting. And I wasn't a total believer in it. I figured there must be something there, but I'd never seen an actual footprint in the dirt itself. I'd seen a lot of plaster casts that they proclaimed came out of that the creature made. But you know, I was one of them kind of people that had to show me believe it. So when I saw this creature, I said, "Well, they really do exist."
So you weren't even going there with the intention of looking for this, right? You were just kind of hiking and. Happened to run into it? Is that what happened?
No, correction. We were there. Roger had been called earlier in September, shortly after Labor Day. I think it was on a Tuesday after Labor Day weekend that they were trying to build logging roads back in that area, starting to build logging roads. So they put a tank of some kind, and I always thought it was a fuel tank, to fuel up the road graders and the caps and so forth that was working there. Well, when they come back to work after the Labor Day weekend, there was three different sizes of footprints around these tanks in that soft dirt. Well, that's what they called Roger, and I say they. I'm not sure who called Roger, but somebody down from that area, and it probably was Al Hodson at the store, called Roger, and he came to my place and wanted me to take him down there. So that's how come we were actually down in that area, and we were looking all the 3 weeks that we were down there. But it had rained heavily, really heavily stormed that week before we got down there, and the footprints were just big muddy things. There was no definition at all in the footprints, so I had not yet seen an actual good footprint in the dirt. But anyway, being we were down there, we just rode every day searching and looking. And so that particular day was a real nice sunshiny October day. We were just riding up the creek bed. Roger was taking pictures of the foliage, leaves turning yellow and red, and it was a beautiful day, sunshine. We come around the bend in the creek, and behind a big downfall tree system, there this creature stood right by the creek, and just turned and walked away slowly as Roger got his camera from his saddlebag.
Now, did it ever look over at you at any point? Was it conscious, aware that you were there? Or?
Oh, yes, it was conscious. It was facing us when I first saw it.
Wow.
And then that famous footage that they've been using forever for a lot of different things is when I rode across the creek on my horse and got down on the ground with my rifle in my hand, in case it came back. I didn't really know what to expect, and Roger's horse ran off, so he didn't have anything either besides the camera. So he wanted me to cover him in case it did come back. Or he told me later that he thought maybe there'd be two more in the area other than that one because of the three different sizes of footprints that they called him down there to begin with.
Wow.
So, yes, it was very exciting and it all happened so quickly and was over with very quickly, too. But, I'll carry it to my grave remembering exactly how it happened.
It's astonishing that it's fortunate you were able to get the footage that you did.
Well, this is true because Roger ran across the creek and kind of stumbled and fell down at one point. And then he ran out of film because he'd been shooting film all the way up for the 3 or 4 miles that we was riding up to there. And so we weren't sure that they had any film footage at all. In fact, it was a big question until he actually saw that short segment of film footage.
So you must have done a lot of interviews and whatnot over the years. Did they interview for that show, In Search Of?
One more time, sir. I didn't hear exactly what the question was.
No, I was just saying you must have been on a lot of shows over the years, interviewed. Did they interview for the In Search Of television show, hosted by Leonard Nimoy back in the 70s?
Well, yeah, I was on a few, but not a lot. I've gone to more conventions and so forth since 2003 than before that, because there was a lot of negative stuff went on in my life about it, about the film footage, and there is still some, but thanks to Bill Munns, and I'll be forever grateful for him to do the work that he's done on it for the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, let's go to Bill. I want to find out how is it, that you guys actually got to hook up and what kind of analysis have you done on the film, Bill?
Okay. As far as my background, when Bob was in Bluff Creek looking at that real thing for real, I was actually in college learning stage makeup and theater arts. And then I became a professional makeup artist, and of course I gravitated toward the creature business of making, weird stuff. And so throughout that early part of my career, I often thought about the possibility somebody might hire me to make a Bigfoot for a movie. So I'd often refer back to that movie as an idea of what Bigfoot might look like and thought about costumes. And it's because of that that I kept looking at the film, and there were things about it that in my mind I was just saying, we don't build costumes this way. This is weird. This doesn't make sense. And so I've had doubts in my mind for a long time because, like I say, we don't build costumes like what I see in the film. But I never really got serious into it until about 4 years ago, a little bit more. I had some other projects that just were going nowhere, and I love to keep busy. So this just kind of intrigued me, and I thought, why don't I take a new look at this? So I started getting into it and joined a discussion forum on the Internet and talking with other people. And when I did, I was actually surprised at how much research had gone into it. And then I was even more surprised that for all of the 40-plus years of research, that nobody figured it out. And so I kind of took a step back and sort of thought to myself, if they haven't figured it out in over 40 years, then they're not doing it right. What are they missing? Because there has to be a solution to it.
Mm-hmm.
So the last couple of years, I've been taking a completely different approach than anybody else to trying to figure out what this film really is and even figure out how do you properly analyze it. And one of the things that was most lacking, or two things actually that were lacking in all of the research before, one of them was a person who actually is a filmmaker, who understands cameras, who understands film, understands copying film, lab processing, optical prints, zooming in the picture, slow motion, all of that stuff, who can look at the film as a filmmaker and understand what we're seeing. The second thing was, if you want to try and figure out what that is in the picture, you have to consider both options equally. A, it's something real, exactly as it appears. Or B, it's some kind of a costume or a suit and there's just a human inside. You have to consider both of those equally.
Sure.
Well, in order to consider it as a costume, what you have to do is to reverse engineer it, which means basically you have to look at it and say, okay, how would I build this? How would I create one that has this look, that does this thing, and so on and so forth? So I have been applying my professional knowledge of actually building such costumes, because I've made quite a few of them over the 40 years of my career. I've applied that knowledge to try and reverse engineer what we see in the film as if it were a costume, and everything I come up with keeps coming up. We don't build costumes like that. This is not a costume.
Yeah.
Everything keeps coming up that way. And
yeah, I remember seeing some analysis of it, and that, you know, they were trying to see if they could, like, see a zipper or something. How did this person get into the costume if it was a costume? And there's
That's one of the things, definitely.
Yeah.
There's a multitude of things about it, which unfortunately without being able to show pictures wouldn't make a whole lot of sense. But there's a multitude of things about it that simply led me to conclude that this is the real deal, you know. And then I was invited to speak at an event up in Yakima. It was in honor of Bob Gimlin about 3 years ago, I believe, in May. Yeah, 3 years ago. And that is when I first finally met Bob himself and had a chance to shake his hand and tell him that how much I envy his experience seeing what he saw, because I'd love to see it for myself, and then expressing my sympathy for all the, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but for all the shit that people have given him who think it's a fake and want to insult him and belittle him and ridicule him because he stands by his story when his story is absolutely true.
Right.
But that's when I actually first
saw how our world works, unfortunately. Anybody who has any idea or belief that doesn't conform with the status quo, it's always been that way. It's
sad. Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm curious if either of you ever heard of, what's his name? I forget his first name. Coleman. Lauren, that's it. Lauren Coleman.
Yeah, he runs a website called Cryptomundo.
Right. He's got an interesting museum. I actually went there once, maybe about 2 years ago, up in Portland, Maine. I guess it's supposed to be the biggest Bigfoot museum in the country, or maybe in the world.
Yeah, as far as I know, Lauren's pretty dedicated to that and well-known for that museum.
Yeah, very interesting stuff in there.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Either of you ever met him? Or?
No, not me.
Yes, sir. I have spent time with Mr. Coleman at quite a few different events.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'd be surprised if you hadn't met him, because I would think he would want to meet you. You know, probably surely the most famous Bigfoot eyewitness. But yeah, if you ever get a chance, you might want to go peruse through his museum there. He's got quite a bit of interesting paraphernalia. He's got some genuine and some casts of casts. You know, footprints from Bigfoot is specifically an American phenomenon, isn't it? I think it's been cited up in Canada as well, but
There's global reports of something of a similar description. If Bigfoot exists, and if this crazy thing that Bob saw wasn't just a real ugly and hairy woman. if they really exist, then it's possible that there's actually several different kinds scattered around the world.
Yeah.
The proverbial abominable snowman is, of course, a variation on it.
Right.
That supposedly lives high up in the Himalayas. There's something in Russia they call the Uran, I believe. There's something in Australia, I think they call it Yowie. And so there are, you know, other reports of things like this scattered around the world. But generally, when you say Bigfoot or even Sasquatch, I think most people assume you're talking about the North American,
right,
type, if you want to call it that, yeah.
Now, coming to the name Sasquatch, that's uniquely Native American. They actually have been reporting this since, what, ancient times, I believe, pre-Columbian times?
Oh, yeah. Bob is wonderful as far as his experience. He was telling me just recently about talking to some of the Yakima Natives. Bob, you want to take that one?
Well, yes. And matter of fact is, Bill, I don't know if you have been advised of this, but one was seen at 4:30 in the morning about 20 miles from my residence here in a little place called Harrow, Washington. A lady, a Native American lady, was on her way to work in a place called Toppenish, and she lived out around White Swan, which these are small little towns in central Washington. In that time of the morning, one ran across the road in front of her headlights, and it was just breaking dawn enough that she could that this creature ran alongside her car about 80 feet over by the canal bank, down about a mile and a half, and then it was going to cross the road again in front of her, and it stopped at a railroad crossing, and that's how she could determine the height of it by the bars of the railroad crossing bars. And so her husband had he and a young gentleman named Mel Scahan had been involved with the Bigfoot thing on the reservation, on the Yakima Indian Reservation here, where they've been sighted a number of different times and tracks and so forth. And this was about 35 miles from, it was on the reservation about 35 miles from the timbered area that they've been sighted quite a few different times here on the Yakima Indian Reservation. So it's not a new, it's nothing new here. They talk, the Native Americans talk about them quite frequently here and say, you guys just leave them alone. They've been here and they're just part of our people. But, you know, that's the way they talk about them. So and they talk about if you mess with them, what kind of bad luck you're going to have. And I think Bill may go into that a little bit, if you wish, Bill.
Well, see, yeah,
before you do that, I just wanted to say that this is what makes this particularly fascinating for me, is we're not just dealing with some modern phenomenon of people wanting attention. This is something that goes way back. The Native Americans have been aware of this long before white men ever came here. But, yeah, go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, Bob and I were talking once, and I happened to mention to him that while most of my work is studying the actual film and the frames and the photography and all that stuff like that, one thing that fascinated me was that it seems, the more I learn about everyone who was directly involved, either with the film itself, like Roger and Bob, or the people who were immediately researching it afterwards, or their relatives or their friends, or anybody who got involved with it in its history, for the most part, it seems to have cursed their lives and caused them more trouble and more headache, heartache, and difficulty than you could ever imagine. Almost like there's a curse on this film. It's the funniest thing.
Kind of like the Native Americans were saying.
Yeah. And for me personally, I mean, I'm 63 right now, and I started looking into this 4.5 years ago. And in the 4.5 years that I've been looking at this film, I have more people who hate my guts than in the 58 years before, and they hate me simply because I say I think the film's real. But I've gotten more enemies in these 4 years than the 58 years combined before that. And
well, I know how that feels. I talk about corruption in politics all the time, so yeah. I've made a lot of enemies, too.
All right. But it seems like I'm on the fringe of this curse of the film, and other people closer to it have suffered a lot more. I know that for Bob personally, there was quite a period of time where it was so difficult for him, his wife, his family, people around him, because of people accusing him of lying, the film's a hoax, all this stuff like that, people ridiculing him. Roger endured that the few years he had left after filming, because he passed away about 4.5 years later. His wife, Patricia, surviving him, she had to put up with an unbelievable amount of crap from people. I can't even imagine what Roger's kids might have gone through. Roger's brother-in-law, Aldi Attlee, who got the film processed and then helped Roger show it around the country in theaters. Al's had his life put under a microscope and a lot of personal things.
And just on that basis alone, that makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? Yeah, I'm going to make up a story like this that's going to cause me ridicule and you know, disrupt my family relations and cause me to lose friends, you know, on and on and on. Just for fun and giggles, you know.
Yeah, I know. The funny thing is the skeptical people, the ones who are just diehard convinced this is all a hoax, they think everybody involved is laughing all the way to the bank.
Right.
They honestly do. They think everybody is in it just to make a fortune, and they're having the funniest time pulling this big joke on the naive public. And they don't realize that just about everybody involved, I would bet you, if they honest to God had a choice, like would you like to go back in time, change history, and not be part of it, I'd bet you most of the people would choose that.
Yeah.
You know,
and you almost can't win because if you say you saw something and you don't have footage, well, obviously you're lying. Even if you have footage, well, it must be a hoax. You know, it must be fake footage. You just can't win.
Yeah, I know. It's difficult. But we're working on it. We're going to finally bring this to a conclusion and once and for all, beyond any doubt, show that this thing is real. And we are going to get there.
I got some questions coming in from people, text form from Skype.
Could I intervene just a second?
Sure.
You know, this may sound like a poor story, but I'll be 81 years old in October, and I'm still riding young horses to make extra money. So the people that thinks that I got rich on that, I wish they would just walk in my shoes for a little while.
Exactly.
I'll tell you, Bob, it must be all those hikes in the woods or something. You sound much younger than 80, in your 80s. Boy, you sound...
Well, thank you very much. I'm pretty healthy, you know, for going on 81 years old. But I've had a lot of accidents, and I've had open-heart surgery. And, you know, I had a few things minor, like broken bones and things like that happen to me. But, you know, I just keep on going. But like Bill said... the first 35 years, I went through a pretty dramatic time in my life. My wife was working also, so she took an awful lot of flack over it. And so, you know, I'm so grateful for people, I said before, like Bill and Dr. Jeff Melgram and the ones that are really sticking with it, that haven't gained by it. They've actually lost by it, but they're still there, and I'm just extremely grateful.
Now, did you ever make, we'll go to the questions in just a moment, but I wanted to ask, did you ever make any attempt since that initial encounter and, the film, to try to see if you could locate the creature again or even get, photograph any footprints or anything?
That's directed at me, is it, sir?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I'll answer that the best I can. I never went back to the film site until 2003, and being that was because I had steady jobs here in the Yakima area, and needed to keep on working to pay my bills like everybody else does, and a negative part of it kept me away from there until 2003, and the Russian scientists came from Russia to go down with me to that film site. But it had grown up, the landscape had changed so much from floods and so forth, and the growth of timber and trees, that I couldn't really pinpoint exactly where it was. And so, I felt just I had lost something, because in my own mind, I felt that I could walk right down there again and go right to the spot. But I couldn't.
Well, I can certainly relate to that. I do a lot of woods hiking myself here in New England. In fact, I go looking for ancient Native American stoneworks. And even when it's not years later, sometimes it's a week later, I'll take a friend in to show him something I found just a week earlier. And most of the time, I can't relocate it. In fact, I got a hiking GPS now, so hopefully I'll alleviate that problem. But it is very difficult to retrace your steps in the woods. It all looks the same after a while. But were they doing a documentary on this when they brought you in?
Well, there was quite a bit of... We went to Canada and showed the film in Canada. But there wasn't a documentary made on it until... Roger and his brother-in-law Al traveled with the film and showed it, and I'm not sure exactly what was done at that time, and I think all they did was advertise and show the film footage itself.
Huh. That's interesting, though. Anyway, did you guys want to go to some of these questions? Or?
Sure. Yeah, questions are great.
Well, sure.
By the way,
whatever.
Yeah. Before we even do that, I wanted to, and maybe again later in the show, give you an opportunity to do this again, but did you guys, aside from your website, Bill,
yes.
Did you guys have anything else that, maybe where people can go and see the actual footage?
Well, the footage itself, it runs on a whole bunch of YouTube videos, so they can see, if they just go to YouTube, there'll be a whole bunch of them there. They're not very good resolution, but... they will show it in many, many videos that are on YouTube right now. You know,
so they can just type in Bob's name, or
yeah, or if they wanted something in better quality, there's a DVD called Legend Meets Science that was put out. You can still buy it, I believe, on Amazon.com, and that has a very, very good quality showing of the footage on that DVD, and there's a couple of other documentaries like that that are available that also have the footage and can show it. There's a couple of things that run on the History Channel where they show it often, on Monster Quest. National Geographic did a program called American Paranormal Bigfoot. That shows the footage, and I think they repeat that sometimes. So they do have some options, but if they wanted to find it right now, YouTube would probably be the best place, even if it's not the best quality. At least give them some idea.
It's kind of ironic, isn't it, that you get so much backlash, even in the professional world, and yet you have major establishments like National Geographic doing documentaries on these alleged fairy tale encounters. You know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The irony of it. But anyway, for those that want to just Google and see if you can find the footage, his name is, again, Bob Gimlin. That's G-I-M-L-I-N. You can just type it into YouTube or whatever, Bigfoot footage, and that should do it. That should bring it up for you. And then, of course, there's your website, Bill.
Yeah. Called themunsreport.com.
Right.
Yeah.
The one I have here is, let's see. It's your name.
The other one's the Beaumont Creature Gallery. That's my career as a makeup artist mainly. Has a little bit of the Patterson stuff, but the main one focusing on this film, it's called themunsreport.com.
I'm looking here at some pictures on your site. That gorilla, is that something you did, or is that a real gorilla?
No, it's what I made. Everything on the site I made.
Wow. Yeah. That thing looked real.
Uh-huh.
Now, the creature underneath that, it's some kind of lizard-like looking thing. That looks like something I saw on TV, the old Land of the Lost series. You didn't do that, did you?
No, Mike Westmore did. No, the creature underneath it is an actual prehistoric animal called a Dimetrodon. They lived in the, I believe, the Devonian Age before dinosaurs. But that's a real creature, yeah.
No kidding.
I made that for a museum in Holland.
Wow.
Yeah, that's about 9 or 10 feet long. It was one of the meanest predators of its time.
This is impressive work. What did you use for that, like latex or something?
No, it's all sculpted in, sculpted and then cast in plastic resin, so it's more archival and endurable as an exhibit model. Yeah.
Wow. Anyway, we're getting off the track here, but I was just interested. You do some really incredible work there. But let's get to some of these questions. The first one we have here, this is from Mike in California, and he's asking if either of you have ever heard of Dr. Melba Ketchum.
Sure.
I guess, yeah, she's got a PhD in veterinary medicine.
Yeah.
She started a DNA diagnostics lab, I guess, in Texas, doing some work, submitting evidence for peer review on Bigfoot. I guess she herself has seen Bigfoot.
Yeah, the Dr. Ketchum is reportedly working on a DNA analysis of samples that have been submitted by a lot of Bigfoot researchers. No paper has been published yet. We're all anxiously awaiting something to be published. So for me, I don't offer any opinion until we actually see the paper, but she is apparently working on a DNA analysis based on samples submitted by other researchers, yeah.
We'll have to keep an eye out for that. That sounds interesting.
Definitely, yeah.
Let's see. We got another question. John from the Canadian Rockies, he says, what is the range of Bigfoot or Sasquatch, you know, its habitat? We kind of touched on that, but... Are there any states where it's more common, or you know, I don't think there's been any sightings in New England, have there? Do you know?
I've seen a few maps that show reports of sightings around the country. I haven't paid a lot of attention to them myself, other than to say that there apparently have been sightings in most of the states, as well as up in Canada.
Wow.
But I wouldn't be an expert on habitat range, so I couldn't really answer that in an authoritative way.
Would you know anything about that, Bob?
You know, Bill covered that quite well. There's speculation on it, but it's mostly speculation. You know, the Olympic Peninsula and the Northwest, some people feel that that's probably a little better habitat because I think the population is sparser throughout the Cascade Range and on up into Canada.
Yeah.
But
the general presumption is that the Pacific Northwest of North America is the
main
preferred habitat
for
this particular creature, entity, whatever you want to call it, yeah. But that there are scattered reports around the country, yeah.
Anyway, let's go on. We've got quite a few more coming in here. We've got, let's see, what do we got next here? We got Alice in Oregon. She says, was Mr. Gimlin afraid when he saw the Bigfoot? We kind of touched on that earlier. And did he have nightmares for fear of being in the wild after that? Did you have a fear of going in the woods after that time?
No, sir. I did not have fear. I would not fear one of these creatures if I was standing 3 foot in front of it. That's the way I feel about them at the present time, and I hope I someday get a chance to try to communicate some way with one of them face to face as close as I can possibly get that it will allow me to.
You get the impression from the footage that it's a rather docile creature. I mean, I'm sure if it wanted to, it could tear you limb from limb just because it's so large.
Yeah.
But it seems to be a rather, docile, peaceful, you know, just wandering about.
Well, there doesn't seem to be. I've never heard of any records where these creatures harm human beings unless they've been endangered themselves. Or, you know, they sometimes, I think, tried to bluff the human beings out of their area by throwing stones and sticks. But if they wanted to hit you, I'm sure that they could. I don't know that to be positive, but in my opinion, their accuracy would probably be surprisingly. If they wanted to really hurt somebody, they could do it very easily with their size and strength. And I don't think there's any records of that.
We've got, not that I know of either. We've got another one here. Janet in Louisiana, she's wondering, Why do you think that Bigfoot corpses or bodily remains have not been found and scientifically verified? Of course, this researcher in Texas we were just talking about is supposed to become
a corpus. Bill, do you want to address that first, then I'll say what I believe.
Yeah. Well, I'm not an expert in that field, quite frankly. I've lived in the city all my life, so I don't speak from any expertise about how easy or hard it is to find natural remains in the woods or in the forest. I hear, you know, some people say, well, bones decompose quickly or bodies decompose quickly and things like that. Because it's not my area of expertise, I certainly listen to the arguments, but I couldn't speak authoritatively and explain the why of it. I've heard stories that maybe they, like many animals, they like to go, if they know they're injured and they think they're going to be dying, they like to go and hide somewhere, which could be in a cave, somewhere in an area where they're not likely to be found. I've heard some people say that they have some kind of a culture and that they bury their bodies. I don't have a clue on that. But I think realistically, the general idea that the woodlands do pretty well chew up any dead body pretty quickly, I think there's a lot of scientific credibility to that general concept, and that that a body remains, depending on the environment and such, can disappear pretty quickly.
It could be, you know, such remains may have been stumbled on, but people mistook them for bears or something. Who knows?
Well, actually, they'd be more likely to be mistaken for human bones. But
if it was fresh with the fur and everything, you know.
If they might just think it's a dead bear, yeah, sure.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. Because once the body does decompose, of course, it swells up, it bloats, it changes its form.
Right.
Its body proportions change significantly. It probably smells to high heavens, and you don't want to get that close to it. You might be worried that there are scavenger animals that might be heading toward it. So you wouldn't want to spend a whole lot of time around a dead body if you happen to come across one. So I think there are certainly a lot of plausible reasons for people not finding them, but I will concede the lack of finding fossils, evidence, bodies, etc., is certainly an element of the mystery that nobody has satisfactorily answered. And it's a very good question for which we don't have an answer yet.
Sure. Well, let's hope this researcher in Texas is going to come out with something that's, you know, concrete that will finally silence the skeptics here. Let's go to another question here. We've got John. I guess he didn't give his location, but he asks, you know, actually, this is something I was wondering about, although how could you know? But he was asking, is Bigfoot a vegetarian? has there ever been any thought on that? How could you tell, I guess?
Well, you need teeth.
Yeah.
So the teeth will tell you what it eats.
And there's really never been any photographs taken showing teeth, or for that matter, any face-on pictures. Usually it's from the rear or a profile.
Unfortunately. Until we got teeth, we don't know what it eats, or either that or stomach content.
You know, here's a thought. I guess probably the last real sighting would have been, significant sighting would have been yours, right, Bob?
Well, no, there's been sightings regularly,
with footage, you know, nobody's come out with footage as impressive as yours.
No.
Right. But what I was going to ask is, has there ever been any attempt after a sighting to bring in, you know, dogs to try to trace a scent or something? Maybe you could follow their trail.
I think they've tried that a few times, yeah.
This was tried with the film footage with the tracks that we had in Northern California. Roger knew some people in Canada that had track dogs that was trained to track anything supposedly that they put them on, not just one particular creature. And so they had been called down from Canada to follow these tracks. Well, it also started raining that night after we saw the creature, had the film footage. Late that night, it started raining really, really heavy. And by the next morning, when they landed with the plane and the dogs at the little airport down there, they couldn't get back into the area where we were at because of mudslides and so forth for a couple of days. And when they did get back, assumingly we weren't there, of course, the dogs would go out a little ways and just whimper and come back. So it seems as though these creatures some way put a hoax on dogs, if you might say, or whatever, because dogs don't seem to want to follow the tracks. And it's been tried since then quite a few different times of different people that I've heard about. I haven't witnessed it myself, but I've heard about it, and they've had no luck at all to get a dog to track one of these creatures.
Yeah, I'd like to add something to that. In talking to another researcher, a guy on the East Coast, he had sighted something, found some footprints, made plaster casts of it, brought them home, and he had the plaster casts, and he was talking to a neighbor or friend or somebody else, showing him the casts and such, and the guy he was showing them to had a couple of dogs. These are fairly good-sized, strong dogs, you know, the kind that you assume are afraid of nothing. And one of the dogs came over and was kind of curious of this cast that he was holding. But as soon as the dog took a sniff of this actual cast of this footprint, the dog backed off, rolled over, started whimpering and crying, almost in a classical surrender posture, which was kind of like, please don't hurt me anymore. And that was just from the residue of the scent that the plaster picked up out of the ground.
So it obviously sensed something foreign that it had never smelled before.
Yeah, there was some odor on that cast that scared the hell out of the dog and put it into a submission posture where it was like, please don't hurt me, you know.
Wow.
Strangest experience. But, yeah, there seems to be something going on there where... there's something about them a dog sure don't like.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, I found that very fascinating.
And, you know, the old saying, a dog doesn't lie. You know?
Yeah.
Wow. How are people going to refute that?
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm checking here if we get any more questions. No, I guess that's it. So what do you guys plan to do from here? Bill, specifically, what, you know, are you trying to put together a film or go on the talk show? Obviously, you're on this talk show, but are you,
yeah.
you wanting to go on other talk show?
Well, no, as far as media interviews, all of that, I never pursue that. That sort of pursues me. The only thing that I'm pursuing is more research on the film because I finally got a little bit of support that allows me to do some scientific experiments that I've wanted to do for years, but I was never able to do before, because in any scientific experiment takes a certain amount of resources and support in order to do, and I haven't been raking in the big bucks, as my skeptics love to think that I'm rolling in money in this. I've been, you know, dead broke for the last 3 years living on Social Security, and that's about it. Just doing the research and... trying to pull together, you know, anything I could do to make progress on it. But finally, I've got a little bit of support, which is wonderful, and it's going to allow me to do some actual scientific tests on things that will clear up a lot of the mysteries of the film. So I have that to look forward to in the next 4 to 5 months. Now, where it goes from there, I don't have a clue, other than the fact that I expect it to put a lot more of the questions to rest and make it much more clear to anyone and everyone who sees the work when it's done that this thing is absolute real, the film is real, and God bless Bob, he saw something the likes of which most of us can't even imagine, you know. So that's basically what I'm looking forward to in the next, say, 4 months or so.
Well, all the power to you guys. This is very interesting. I wish you the best of luck. I hope you can create more of an awareness. And who knows, as more people take an interest in this, maybe we will actually get some more hard evidence to finally silence the skeptics. It's that, you know, there aren't very many people looking for this, so how can you find it? You know, it's only when you get more people becoming active that you can finally lay these skeptics to rest here, the skepticism.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Anyway, it looks like we've come to the end of our show here. But, again, I want to thank you guys for coming on. Keep up the good work, and we'll have to follow you. And you know, if you've got anything new going on, we'll have to get you back on and give us an update.
Sure.
All right. Thanks a lot. Take care, and hopefully one day we will get that evidence.
We will.
Okay. Thanks.
We sure do hope so. And like I said before, I'm grateful for Bill for all the work he's doing on it, and at my age, I'm just kind of hanging loose here, training horses and breaking and training a few horses and trying to keep from getting broke myself. And I want to thank you again for having us on.
Yes,
you
thank
bet.
You very much.
Keep going, Bob. You sound like you're in real good shape. I think you got a lot of years ahead of you. Keep up.
Well,
keep trucking.
Yeah, I just tell everybody on my 100th birthday I'm going to get on a colt. If I get bucked off, I'm going to quit for the winter.
Excellent advice, Bob.
Okay, guys, thanks again. And, folks, join us next Tuesday. We're going to be having Dr. Alan Sabrowski on. He's going to be talking about Israel and 9/11. That should be very interesting. So have a great week, and we'll see you then. Take care.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief office I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.